One of the great things about the Old Testament, which, believe it or not, many people don't like, is that we can turn back to the stories of the Old Testament and gain some understanding about God himself, some understanding about God's dealing with his people and this relationship that he has with his people. And we can see themes throughout the Old Testament which are very relevant to us today in our everyday walk of faith. We see themes of grace in God. We see themes of God's deliverance, delivering his people at all times like he promised to do. We've learned that God is a covenant God, a covenantal God. He makes covenant with his people, and he keeps that covenant and never breaks that covenant. But one of the themes that we see that run not only throughout the Old Testament, but run down through the years of history and run even into our time today, into our own hearts, into our own faith journeys, is the theme of fear. Fear just seems to have a way of stabbing faith right in the heart. We claim to be faithful people. We claim to have faith in Jesus Christ. We claim to have faith that keeps us strong in our journey in our everyday life, regardless of what happens in our lives. But yet, there is just that element of fear in the heart of every human being. When somebody says to me, I'm not afraid of anything, I shudder when I hear that. Because think of the immensity of that statement, I'm not afraid of anything. When a human being says that, it's a statement of pride. It's actually a statement of ignorance, because the Bible tells us that we should be afraid of certain things. But yet, in that fear, we find a certain grace extended to us, and a certain power and a certain strength by Almighty God. Especially when we turn to God and say, God, I'm afraid. I'm afraid, God. And people say we shouldn't be afraid because God's our God. We trust God. We have faith in God. We shouldn't be afraid. But God knows our hearts. He knows the human being. And when we come to him crying to him, I'm afraid, God, we are acknowledging our weakness and his power. We are acknowledging our lacks in courage and our trust in him. And one of the themes that we see here in the book of 1 Samuel is how fear enters into this covenantal community. If we remember, this began in with the story of a woman who had no child. And by the grace of God, she had a child. She named him Samuel. He became the last judge in Israel. He was a spiritual leader. He came in and helped cleanse the nation of Israel from all of the atrocities that were being committed by the priesthood there. He was instrumental as God's spokesperson in removing the priestly order and stepping in as God's lead spokesperson to the nation of Israel. The nation of Israel had been saved over and over by their covenantal God. They were God's people. God said to them, do not fear me. Don't be afraid of me. I am your people, but yet revere me in a way that you always trust me and always turn to me, knowing that I'm your only hope for salvation. But what fear does is it enters into these situations in our lives in a time sometimes when we are most oblivious to the attacks by the enemy. And you know who I'm talking about is the enemy. When these situations in our lives happen, whatever they might be, physical, spiritual, financial, whatever they might be, and we find ourselves in dire straits, in a critical time in our life, the enemy is there saying, where's your God? Where's your God? Be afraid, be very afraid, because it seems like God's abandoned you. And he's trying to convince you and I to be afraid to the point where we think, well, I need to do something. I need to do something about this situation. When God's word tells us, we just simply need to trust in the Lord with our hearts and lean not on our own understanding, but in all our ways acknowledge him. He'll guard us, he'll guide our paths, make our paths straight. Fear in this situation resulted in the broken covenant between God and his people. You see. And what happened as a result of that broken covenant was the bailout of God's people. They bailed out of that covenant. You see, here in this story, we find Saul was king over Israel. He reigned for 40 years. Saul chose 3,000 men from Israel. 2,000 were with him at Michmash in the hill country of Bethel. 1,000 were with his son Jonathan at Gibeah, and Benjamin, and the rest of the men he sent back to their homes. And Jonathan went and attacked a Philistine outpost. We don't know why, but he attacked the Philistine outpost at Geba, and the Philistines heard about it. Saul had the trumpet blown throughout the land, and he said, "Let all Israel hear the news. Saul has attacked the Philistine outpost, and Israel's become a stench to the Philippines." And he summoned the people to join him at Gilgal. Well, first of all, he lied because he was taking credit for this great attack on the Philistines, which he didn't actually initiate. His son Jonathan did. So he lied about this to the people. Well, the Philistines assembled to fight Israel. You know anything about the Philistines? At that particular time in history, they were the people that sort of had, a monopoly on iron and metal making. The Philistines were experts at working metal and making weapons, so that's why they were such a big force in a battle. It was an amazing thing when you defeated the Philistines. They had all the weapons, they had the chariots, they had the swords, they had the metal spears. And in fact, Israel had even gone down to Philistia at some points to have them make weapons for them. But what happened, the Philistines then assembled to fight Israel. They had 3,000 chariots, 6,000 charioteers, and soldiers as numerous as the sand on the seashore. And they went up and camped at Michmash, east of Beth Aven. So here we have this situation. Here is King Saul, clearly outnumbered, 3,000 men. The Philistines had 3,000 chariots with 6,000 charioteers, and who knows how many soldiers. Clearly he was outnumbered. The Philistines camped east of Saul and his 2,000 men. And in verse 6 it tells us, when the men of Israel saw that their situation was critical and their army was hard pressed, they hid in caves and thickets, among the rocks and in pits and cisterns. Some Hebrews even crossed the Jordan to the land of Gad and Gilead. What happened? The people bailed out on God. They bailed on God, not on Saul. They bailed on God. The situation was critical. The King James Version says the army was in a strait. That word strait implying they were cramped. Have you ever gotten in a situation where the situation was so critical, you felt outnumbered, you just felt like the problems were more than you could handle, the stress was more than you can handle, you just felt so bound up and so cramped, like you couldn't even move because the problem was so overwhelming in your life, or so it seemed so. And it tells us that the people were distressed and the army was hard-pressed. There was so much pressure in this situation. It seemed like a hopeless situation to God's people. The Philistines clearly had the advantage. The enemy clearly had the advantage, or so it seemed. Doesn't it seem that way? Doesn't it seem that way, like the enemy? Our enemy has the advantage over us. We can't get away from, we can never get away from him. And the Bible tells us that we won't. Because he's an ancient foe. He knows every trick in the book to get to you and to have a negative effect on your life. And it seems so overwhelming, like there's so much pressure when he attacks in our lives, when he comes to our and right up in our faces and makes it sound so hopeless. And what do we do? We're afraid. We're scared to death about the situation. And the last thing we should do is bail on God. These people took off. They ran. They were scared to death. They bailed out of the covenant. God had a covenant with these people. I'll never leave you nor forsake you. You see, in the beginning of 1 Samuel, we talked about the Ark of the Covenant of God, the Ark of the Covenant of God, the Ark of the Covenant of God. Over and over and over, that word covenant was used because God chose those people. And Samuel reminded them, don't be afraid. You've done all this evil. Don't turn away from the Lord. Serve him with all your heart. Because for the sake of his great name, he's not going to reject you. He was pleased to make you his own. That has more weight than the enemy can ever present to us, folks. In God. The people bailed out and the troops bailed out. Saul remained at Gilgal and all the troops with him were quaking with fear. He waited 7 days, the time set by Samuel, but Samuel did not come to Gilgal and Saul's men began to scatter. Now, if you know anything about the story earlier, Samuel had told him when Samuel anointed him, Saul as king, Samuel had said to Saul, go down ahead of me to Gilgal. I'll come down to you to offer sacrifice, burnt offerings, and fellowship offerings. But you have to wait 7 days until I come and tell you what you're to do. Saul did not have the authority to offer the offerings. Only Samuel did. All right? So here Saul was in this situation, this dire situation with so much pressure, so much stress, bound up with fear. Everybody was taken off. Everybody was bailing on God, bailing out of the covenant. Saul was outnumbered. The situation was critical. It was a crisis situation and the pressure was overwhelming. This was nothing new for God's people and this was nothing new for God. Remember when Samuel reminded them of all that God had done in the past in chapter 12? It's the Lord who appointed Moses and Aaron and brought your forefathers up out of Egypt. After Jacob entered Egypt, they cried to the Lord for help, and the Lord sent Moses and Aaron, who brought your forefathers out of Egypt and settled them. But they forgot the Lord, so he sold them into the hand of Sisera. They cried out to the Lord, and they said, we've sinned, we've forsaken the Lord. So what did he do? He sent Jerubbaal, Barak, Jephthah, and Samuel, and he delivered you from the hands of your enemies on every side so that you live securely. In other words, he reminded them of what God had done for them. In every situation, God gave them victory and gave them security. And he reminded them, but then when you saw Nahash, king of the Ammonites, was moving against you, you said, no, we want a king. We want a king to rule over us. Okay, here's your king, Samuel said to them, the one you asked for. This was not a new situation for God's people. So when we get in those situations, we should not be surprised and say, wow, why is God allowing this? Why is this happening to me? I don't understand it, God. God has a great reason for it. He's ready to exercise his authority and his sovereignty, see? And though we are afraid in those situations that we get into when the enemy confronts us, we have to understand this is not new for God. This is not new for God. Let's see. So what happened? What happened often happens today. Saul became impatient. He said, bring me the burnt offering and the fellowship offerings. And Saul offered up the burnt offering just as he finished making the offering. Samuel arrived and Saul went out to greet him. Samuel said, what have you done? And Saul said, well, when I saw that the men were scattering and that you did not come at the set time, that the Philistines were assembling at Michmash, I thought, now the Philistines are going to come down against me at Gilgal. I've not sought the Lord's favor, so I felt compelled to offer the burnt offering. And Samuel said, you have acted foolishly. Saul became impatient. But not only with God, but with Samuel, those around him. He took matters into his own hands and lost trust in God. Now, I ask myself, Saul had already experienced victory because of the Lord's presence in his life as king. Why wouldn't he have trusted the Lord again? Because fear entered into the situation. The situation seemed so dire, so critical, so hopeless. He was outnumbered. He was outmanned. And he thought he had to do something. I got to do something here. So what did he do? He got religious. He got religious. He He offered up the offerings to God because he says, I've not sought the Lord's favor. Remember right after the Sunday, right after the September 11th attacks, the churches were full, weren't they? Everybody got religious for a week, 2 weeks, maybe three. And then everything was back to normal again. As we oftentimes do. We're like the child who knows the parent is mad at them. So what do? Well, maybe we make them some cookies. Or maybe we make them some coffee. But we do something because we want to make them happy again. We want to restore the relationship, you see. And oftentimes the churches are most full when the people are most sick. I'm not saying it's wrong to come to church in those situations. In fact, we should seek the Lord, but that's religion, folks. That's seeking the Lord for the wrong reasons, as if what we can do can restore that relationship. It doesn't work that way. The Bible tells us all of our righteous deeds are as filthy rags to the Lord. He looks at that and he says, yeah, right. I've heard this before. You see. If Saul, waiting for Samuel, would have gone to the Lord and said, Lord, I'm afraid here. Things just have gotten out of hand. The situation is so critical. The army's hard pressed. We are in dire straits here in distress. The people have left me. The troops are now bailing out. Remember Jehoshaphat? We don't know what to do, and we're powerless to do anything, but our eyes are fixed on you. And the Lord came in and rescued them. You see, if Saul would have confronted the Lord knew the hopeless situation. He knew what was going to happen. If Saul just simply would have went to him and said, I'm afraid here, Lord. It seems as though the enemy has come up against us, and it seems like a hopeless situation. The Lord would have taken care of the situation and maybe given him a little patience. But instead, what did Saul do? In our current day to day, he ran to the internet. He got on the internet to do the research, to see how to deal with this problem. He read one of the bestsellers, New York Times bestsellers. He went to friends and confronted friends. It's amazing how many people have diagnosed Ellen already, and she hasn't even had a biopsy on the tumor on her thyroid. But I want to tell you, my wife and I are praying, Lord, she's yours before she's ours. Give us patience. Give us peace. Because we have a covenant with you, God. And you've been through this before. You see, Samuel came like he said he would, but the damage was already done. Saul had sealed his fate here in bailing out of the covenant with God because of his impatience, driven by fear, afraid of what might happen. How many times do we react because of what might happen? Nancy Lee DeMoss, I'll never forget, one day had a message I was listening to on the radio about how we take the possible and make it probable. Yes, this is possible. It could possibly happen, but all of a sudden we've made it that it's probably going to happen, and we're scared to death. And what do? We start running around like chickens with our heads cut off, and we start bailing out of the covenant with God, forgetting that covenant isn't a covenant we made. It's a covenant God made, you see, because we're afraid of what might happen. And because they forgot their God who can make victory happen. I have in my notes here, remember 12:14, chapter 12, verse 14. Samuel said to the people, if you fear the Lord and serve and obey him and don't rebel against his commands, and if both you and the king who reigns over you follow the Lord your God, good. But if you do not obey the Lord and if you rebel against his commands, his hand will be against you, as it was against your fathers. Samuel said, "You acted foolishly. You've not kept the command the Lord your God gave you. If you had, he would have established your kingdom over Israel for all time, but now your kingdom will not endure." You see, it's not that God didn't love Saul anymore. Saul still would be king, but his descendants would not be heirs to the throne. God already had somebody in mind for that. "The Lord has sought out a man after his own heart and appointed him leader of his people because you have not kept the Lord's command." God did not abandon Saul. I want you to understand that before we leave this morning. God did not abandon Saul. Saul had sinned against the Lord. He bailed out of the covenant because he was afraid and led the people astray. You see, but he was still one of God's chosen people. And God knew this was going to happen. God warned the people through Samuel what was going to happen if they got their king. But they got their king and they were experiencing what happens when we get our way with God. But God did not abandon Saul. God had a man in mind who sought after his own heart. And all this was driven by fear. Fear in the situation resulted in a broken covenant and the bailout of the people involved. Gosh, I hope that's not our story. Because we can see what happens in this story when we do that. I know oftentimes we sin because we break God's commands. That's sin. It's law-breaking. The Bible tells us that. But our God of grace, especially when we are afraid and we don't turn to Him and we don't stand firm in our faith because of fear, we don't fall out of grace, we fall into grace. Grace is the net of God that He's laid out before us that says, when you sin, when you disobey me, when you turn against me, I've placed this before you because I'm going to catch you rather than let you fall for all eternity. Because in those nets, we bounce back by God's grace and God restores us and heals us and redeems us as His own people. We're going to begin this story, continue this story in 3 weeks as we start to see King David coming on the scene, you see. All this happened in Israel to prepare for Israel's greatest king, a man after God's own heart, a greater king who would lead the people in the right direction, who himself sinned, but yet to whom God extended grace. But I want to finish this morning with just a couple things in mind. What happened here was the people became afraid when the situation seemed so dire and so critical. They were hard-pressed. They were bound up by the situation, by the enemy. And the result, or the reaction of the people, was to bail out on God. That's the wrong thing to do, is to bail on God. But instead, as Samuel reminded them, turn to the Lord with all your heart. And as they bailed out on God, they were breaking the covenant with God and starting to take matters into their own hands. And we know what happens when we take matters into our own hands. We don't know the future. God does. We don't have the power to control things. God does. We're afraid of what might happen. God knows what is going to happen. And we need to remember our God who can make victory happen. I think we've all been there. I think we've all been attacked by the Philistines in one way or another. But we still have this great God as our God. And He always brings the victory. Let's pray.